This is the Paula Gordon Show. Christopher Dickey is with us. We're talking about a number of things that you have covered as a reporter as well as reporting to us in the book, Securing the City Inside America's Best Counterterror Force, the NYPD. Bill Russell?
Democracy is the worst form of government, except all the others. Part of, I think, the challenge, I mean, we grew up in roughly the same time. We sort of grew up being taught that little Southern exercise aside, that America had perfected democracy. And the problem with having perfected it is no longer dynamic. So I think we didn't understand that democracy was an ongoing struggle and that it has real challenges, not the least of which is when you're dealing with totalitarians, when you're dealing with violence. The rule of law is very important. Justice is a requirement for the rule of law to provide legitimacy. All of those things are very important lessons, and we ignored most of them. The GWAT flies
Global
in the face.
Global War on Terror, for those who are not using acronyms.
We just abandoned that wholesale. The administration led us, but we, by and large, as a people, for a time, you fought it. We tried in our own way. But by and large, the country, the Republicans, the Democrats, the great American electorate, formed up and got in line and marched down that path saying, well, democracy, but not too much. Laws, but not for those people. Justice, but not, you know, but we can't let it get out of hand. That was a serious mistake.
Well, I think it was a serious mistake, although sometimes I think that the backlash against that goes too far, too. I mean, I think there was a kind of a false dichotomy for a while in discussing these issues where you had the military paradigm, and I think you understand I don't think that's a good idea, and then there was the law enforcement paradigm, as if that was the alternative. In fact, what's needed is a different kind of formation where you have the combination of law enforcement and intelligence gathering. That's how you fight terrorism. Because let's think about this for a minute. To have couched the actions of a handful of people in a framework of a war of civilizations, a clash of civilizations, is plainly nuts. This is not a clash of civilizations. These are a few testosterone-driven malcontents, some of whom are creative enough to figure out a way to hijack planes and blow up the World Trade Center and the Pentagon.
And some of whom had IQs of 78 and went along.
And a lot of them were at that level. It is stunning, the more you study terrorism, how many morons there are in the ranks of the terrorists. And also stunning that occasionally you will have a Khalid Sheikh Mohammed or a Mohammed Atta, the lead hijacker on 9/11, who really are brilliant and organized and obsessive and out to do what they want to do.
Which also sounds like the Unabomber when you're looking at domestic terror.
Of course. Of course. Why do we think that this is something unique to Muslims? It's something that's commonplace. There are a lot of nuts running around, and some of them have apocalyptic visions of themselves. You know, there's a whole riff in the book about the influence of Hollywood movies on these guys. Godzilla movies. Godzilla with Matthew Broderick here, but they were watching it in Afghanistan because they loved all that destruction.
And we're going to take out the Godzilla Bridge, whichever one that is.
Yeah, right, exactly. Exactly. So I think that the one of the things that the NYPD does and that Securing the City tries to focus on is the effort to keep it in perspective. Let's not talk about the worst thing that could happen. Let's talk about what does happen. Let's talk about the way terrorists actually do organize. If there was a fatal problem in the Bush administration, it's summed up in the word intentions. The Bush administration wanted to be judged by its intentions, not its actions. And in fighting terrorists, it judged them and their potential by their intentions, not their capabilities. And those two things fed off each other to give us a clash of civilizations and a global war on terror, when in fact we were talking about a relatively limited threat by a limited number of people who could be not easily neutralized, but could be neutralized by effective intelligence work, maybe some covert action, a lot of diplomacy, and by holding on to the American dream and making it clear that that's something that people can and should stand up for, and not only in this country, but outside the country.
When I was reading Securing the City, I kept thinking, because I didn't know you, I hadn't been following closely, and I kept thinking, where's police state in this? I kept pulling back thinking, and again, I did not come to this with preconceptions. I was trying to look at the story you were telling and how the police were being really effective, and I kept thinking, where's the line that this goes from policed to police state, from city state to police state?
I think everybody who knows the situation in New York is concerned about that. Because this is really personality driven. People trust Ray Kelly, and they trust David Cohen. Well, the FBI doesn't trust David Cohen, but people trust Ray Kelly, who's the man in charge, to know where that line is and not to cross it, or if he does cross it, to back up.
Well, but what if it's Dick Cheney you're talking about?
What if it's Bernie Kerik, the guy who was police commissioner before, who's now under indictment? I mean, there are a lot of things that could go very wrong with this paradigm.
Thank you, Mr. Giuliani.
Mr. Giuliani, look, it's very worrisome. And I think, you know, as much as Kelly and Cohen talk about institutionalizing it and having it move forward, in fact, it's going to be very hard to do that. Now, there are some bright people who look at this and say, you know, we have to look at the intelligence law enforcement model and ways to develop that, not only at the New York City level, but at a more effective in more effective ways at the national level.
And international level.
Well, and we're working with other countries. But it is worrisome. And at the end of the day, you know, I'm asking that question at the end of the book. How far could you go with this? How do you stop it from being a police state? And because I think you guys have the background to bring this up, I'm not sure how many of your viewers or listeners do. In fact, if you look at what the NYPD does, it bears some resemblance to the old COINTELPRO program mm-hmm. during the 1960s and early 70s especially, that was used by the FBI in those days to eliminate the Weathermen and some other domestic terror groups and to intimidate a lot of people who were just pinkos and dissidents.
And civil rights.
And civil rights. We all understand that there were a lot of abuses in COINTELPRO, but it was interesting that it also was very successful at preventing the Weathermen eventually from doing the kinds of things that they wanted to do. They just couldn't convict them in court later on, which is exactly the position of the NYPD.
Yeah, but they did violate an awful lot of civil liberties.
They did, and there are a lot of people who will tell you that the NYPD does it, but they can't seem to prove it.
And there are a lot of people trying. There's the classic, I mean, this goes back hundreds, probably thousands of years. Who guards the guardians?
Mm-hmm.
And I found myself, I mean, you raise it and come at it a lot of different ways, and it's a sub-theme. I mean, it comes back. Not the least because there's so much conflict among the various mm-hmm. alphabet soups with the police. And I found myself thinking that old child's game, rock, scissor, paper.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's the way we design the government of the country, so that there was always somebody looking at somebody else, but it wasn't binary. Mm-hmm. And part of it is just, you know, you need responsible institutions that are separate from other responsible institutions. And you know, the New York Police Department, under the wrong people, given where they are today, unchecked, could do some really ugly things.
As could the federal government.
We all know the dangers, and it seems like this is just part of the dirty part, the hard part of democracy. Is you know you got to keep you know there have to be different institutions with a responsibility for checking on other institutions that have exceptional power, and we got to live with that.
We do, and I think that, you know, one of the things I hope does not happen again is I wouldn't like to see the press abdicate its responsibility again the way it did, by and large, in 2002.
Cheerleaders.
It was really stunning to watch, especially if you were out in the field.
It was very disappointing, and particularly for a practitioner, I would think it had to be close to demoralizing.
Yeah. It is. I mean, I think if there's any nightmare that you have as a war correspondent or a journalist doing the kind of thing I do, and a lot of people do that sort of thing, it is to see a disaster on the horizon, to see something really horrible coming at you, and to tell the world, and have nobody listen.
Or not be able to get the voice out.
No, you know, really, that's not the problem. The problem is that people don't listen. It's that you... you write one article, you do one television spot. Television pretty was pretty shameless in 2002.
Prostitution comes to mind.
You do an article. Well, do you do another article that says the same thing the following week? Is that journalism, or are you adopting a cause?
And what would the cause have been?
Well, the cause would have been to try and stop the war. And I did my best in terms of writing this stuff, but it was overwhelmed. I think, you know, Newsweek, I'm very proud of Newsweek. You can look at what we did on the web, and you can look at what we did in the print magazine. I did a long piece the week that Colin Powell testified, the title of which was The Perils of Victory, which basically laid out exactly what we've seen. Because this was not rocket science. This was not hard to figure out if you knew the region. And anybody in the State Department or the CIA or the military who knew the region understood that these problems were staring us in the face. But you get overwhelmed. You just get overwhelmed. But that's the nightmare. And it happened to, you know, it's happened many times through history. Journalists who were covering Rwanda in the 90s, they saw it coming.
We see coming a quick break as we come back in a moment with Christopher Dickey. Be with us.